You know, there are 28 states that still have blue laws. Texas has a few remaining. It is illegal to sell hard liquor on Sundays, Christmas, or Thanksgiving anywhere in the state of Texas. I believe car dealerships have to be closed at least one day of the weekend. In the 1960s, these laws began to be repealed. As an 8-year-old, I noticed something changing. We kids had to move our baseball and football and basketball games out of the streets and to the limitations of vacant lots because, for some reason, the traffic started getting on the streets on Sunday mornings and on Sunday. And this was very annoying to us. We would have to, at first, we tried to live with it and wait for them to pass, but that, you know, that ruined everybody's mojo. So we had to eventually cooperate. Neighbors we knew didn't go to church were out driving around on the street messing things up. Eventually, you could buy furniture, go to malls, and many other stores on Sunday. I remember one time I was riding with my grandfather to the hardware store. Hardware stores were one of the first that were allowed to open on Sunday. He noted all the extra cars on the road, and he said, "You know, people in government spend too much money in 6 days. Now those fools in Austin have given them another day." Now, I haven't done a deep study on blue laws, but we are in luck because MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has done a study, and it reveals some interesting things we ought to note. So I'm going to quote a little bit from this study. It was done in 2006. It is available on the internet. And the study is called Church versus the Mall. Now I'm beginning to quote from the study. "We begin by using data from the General Social Survey, the GSS, on religious attendance to show a very strong reduction in religious attendance when blue laws are repealed, particularly among those who had been relatively frequent attendees before repeal. We also used data from the Consumer Expenditure Survey, the CEX, to document a strong decline in religious contributions when blue laws are repealed, despite no change in other charitable activities. We confirmed these findings using a unique data set of a budget data for four major Christian denominations over the past 40 years, which show a significant decline in church expenditures when the blue laws are repealed. These results do not seem to be driven by declines in religious fervor prior to the law change, nor do we see comparable declines in membership or giving to non-religious organizations after a state repeals its laws. Thus, secular competition does not matter for religious participation. Increased secular opportunities for work and leisure on Sundays leads to less time at church and lower religious contributions. We find that repealing blue laws leads to an increase in drinking and drug use behavior. The effect is economically significant. For example, the gap in heavy drinking between religious and non-religious individuals narrows by about half after the laws are repealed." Still quoting, and they quote this, still quoting, says, "This MIT study does not address what happened to spending except to point out that less money went toward churches." Still quoting from MIT, they say, "Other studies have, and spending on entertainment and consumer goods dramatically increased with new opportunity. The one day of Sunday represents only 14.3% of the week, but because it is not a school or work day, its impact on spending is greater than normal weekdays. This was very well understood and expected by the business community and government, who wanted the taxes that would be generated by repealing blue laws." End of quote. So there's some interesting implications here. A Sabbath, even if the wrong day, where businesses are closed, would reduce consumer and governmental spending and increase the use of religious and spiritual cures for social problems. Now, the last 5 or 6 decades has seen significant increases in addiction, along with a dramatic change in how financial stewardship is viewed. The removal of blue laws is but one reason. I guess I'm thankful for blue laws. They stealthily tie a part of financial stewardship and soberness to God. This is a situation where relationships exist, whether noticed or not. So being steadfast Sabbath keepers has helped us in financial and psychological ways, even if we've been unaware of the connection. I would like to consider the point my grandfather made. In general, people and government spend more than they should, and they don't need any extra help. Now, God has an order and a design, principles for our well-being. In addition, a major purpose of our existence is to develop holy character, which requires learning of and making better choices, which requires going against our natural tendencies. He's given us tools, like the Sabbath. It benefits health and finances too, not just religious instruction. God shares principles for life, and they always reach beyond the obvious. In itself, spending is not evil. Good things come from spending. As well as most things or most topics, there's also another side that can bring a lot of problems. And thus, it matters to God. Now, I would like to paraphrase a few scriptures. I'm going to tell you them, but we don't need to turn to them. Just you can look them up later. Do like what as Reagan said, trust but verify. I'm all for that. Psalms 50, verses 10 and 11. Listen, my people, and I will speak. For every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains, and the wild beasts and the insects in the field are mine. Haggai 2:8, the silver is mine and the gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty. 1 Chronicles 29:12-14, the wealth and honor come from you. This is David's prayer, Ezra's recording it. David's prayer, wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things. In your hands are strength and power to exalt and give strength to all. Everything comes from you, and we have given you only what comes from your hand. So, eggs from the chickens, firewood to keep us warm, to the digits appearing twice a month in bank accounts, are God's. They are God's. They belong to Him. Only on loan for our use and benefit. And polite people treat other people's objects carefully, and you and I would say especially God's things. Now, approaches towards stewardship vary. Unawareness to the need, thus accidental, might describe many people today. Others may have well thought out plans, action steps, and follow through. It's often a bookkeeping thing with well-meaning goals. However, God may not be centered in the effort. A healthy mindset doesn't come with breath and a heartbeat. It's developed, it's formed in character. Come with me to Matthew 23. Matthew 23. And verse 23. Matthew 23, 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe on mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. So yes, justice, mercy, and faith are areas that deserve focus and growth while still tithing. Stewardship is interconnected with them all. And tithing, like the Sabbath, is another tool that God gives us to learn and to benefit from. It is a blessing. To tithe forces planning and thought. Focus must be brought to the situation. Our relationship with God makes tithing a desire. We are in partnership with God, unwinding a developing mystery, our converted life, and while using His resources. There are sometimes difficulties with tithing and in managing all other needs. This exercise, too, is very good for us. Focus and faith are drawn into the difficulty. And we are not programmed robots. We've been designed for character development. Character development is mind expanding. It finds arrows. It discovers new truths. It discovers and shores up truths. It makes us wiser. Now, whether a Christian spends too much or too little, and while misers may be an endangered species, they do still exist. My nickname as a child was Mike the Miser. There were certain things that happened in my life early on that made me kind of tend to that, and I've been in the process of working away from Mike the Miser. In any event, whether we spend too much or too little depends on a great many factors, and it's somewhat subjective. Income, level of savings, debts owed, job security, life expectancy, one's health or medical expenses, insurances that we may or may not have that can cushion unemployment, disability, sickness, or death. With these complexities and others, how we apply godly principles, safety, order, fairness, discipline, and love matters. It matters to God. It has both physical and spiritual implications. And it has both physical and spiritual implications if we don't take steps. Our stewardship needs to be ordered, even, you know, if the world's is not. In the world around us, they don't have any order. And in many cases, there seems to be no stewardship. But we're coming out of this world. God calls mankind's system confusing. Babel. Dishonest, unpredictable, and unreliable. And you know, economies go up while planting the seeds to tank. In the past 70 years, the United States has had 12 recessions, averaging about 10 months each. We're well overdue for another. Recessions used to be considered healthy, even though there is job loss and lots of pain. I'm not sure how that's healthy when a lot of families suffer, but in that area of studies and all, it is considered healthy. In more recent years, there is a great deal of financial engineering done to delay or avoid recessions. These efforts have harmful side effects, mostly asset bubbles and much deeper recessions with greater losses and pain when they do hit. The times between recessions is now stretched out by reducing interest rates. And the deal there is to tempt people to keep buying and to move their purchases forward before it's earned and often before it's needed. And, you know, the game is buy, buy, buy. That is the programming. We were born into a debt-driven system. It's all we know. More debt must come into existence or the system collapses. Enough new money must be created to keep up with all interest costs. That's inflationary. And why some of you here who may be older can remember maybe going to the movie for 25 cents, and now it's $10. This is why. By some measurements, we are recovering from COVID, but we have weak growth, in part because so much purchasing has already been moved forward. They've already been made. Times of prosperity are different from times of economic retraction and job scarcity. Stewardship requires care because, again, economies go down. And, you know, the fruits of one's labor isn't reached by the utilization of debt, like we've been taught for decades. Debt is different. It's actually someone else's labor, isn't it? It's someone else's labor or fruits, and they're lending it to us because we haven't earned it yet. And that debt comes with a cost. Now, it can be an acceptable cost, but stress and risk are still associated. God gave man stewardship over the earth and everything in it. Our governments haven't chosen God's ways in this area. You know, we don't have Jubilee years. Interest on credit cards is criminally high, well beyond usury. Mankind's financial structures with its fiat currencies, meaning that it's just something that's faith. You know, I could tell you this is worth your car, and if you believed me, you would give me your car. I mean, that's all it is. It's just faith. It's not based on anything. Money must always expand in order to make room for loans and the interest. The system works until new productivity can no longer keep pace with the growing interest cost, and that's really where we are now. God has given each of us a little bit to be responsible for. Our time, our opportunities, our bodies, our relationships, and our finances are all resources to manage. And they all intersect. And because they intersect, one impacts the other for better or for worse. Now, we must give account for what he has entrusted to us. We are up against a whole lot. Man's system is not designed for everyone's success. Maybe you've noticed that. It is designed for some success, someone's success, but we're not usually on that list. And money flows, strangely, it flows uphill. It does. It flows towards those who have more financial intelligence and who understand the system and are positioned to utilize the system. And thus, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And when they print trillions, the ones closest to it get the most. Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22, and we're going to read the first three verses. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So there's more important things for sure. The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. A prudent man or woman foresees evil and hides themselves, but the simple pass on and are punished. Some translations say suffer. So first things first, yes, of course. But along with that, God expects us to keep our eyes open to approaching problems and to prepare. For me to think that God has few opinions about the way my family handles his resources, except that we tithe, is to ignore much of what he has to say. In fact, it's not learning from tithing, and it's not learning from Sabbath experiences. Stewardship is getting our houses in order. Disorder to order. Do we still have opportunity to save, reduce, or eliminate debt, budget, and store something away for harder times? Well, you know, I think so. The end of the world scenario happens just once, from what I understand. We have to work while it is still light. And, you know, assuming the Jews don't start sacrificing tomorrow, I think we have time. The world's central banks and governments go to great lengths to give the appearance of an improving economy. They do so by the manipulation of a lot of different calculations, the Consumer Price Index, wage growth, employment calculations, and we could spend a long time, but we don't have time, about how they do those things. Anyone that can fog a mirror knows inflation is far higher But what can they do? Now, the Federal Reserve is raising rates to tame inflation, while at the same time, the administration has approved $4.8 trillion of newly printed money to put into the economy, which is inflationary. They have one foot slamming on the brakes and the other foot slamming on the gas. What could possibly go wrong? Could y'all bring up that website? This is the our nation's debt clock. And there is a great deal of information there. The one that's the biggest there in the top, well, it's not the biggest, actually. Unfunded liabilities is the biggest one, but the one particularly to the top left. Except for short sound bites, there is no aversion to colossal amounts of debt, as you can see. Our government leaders don't see this as a failure in stewardship. You know, they have different objectives, don't they? You know, we have not had a government budget since 1996. 1996 was the last time we actually had an approved budget by the Senate and Congress. We've been going with something called continuing resolutions since then, which means whatever the budgets were for all the departments of the government, you add 8% to it, and that's their new budget. Now, you didn't get an 8% raise every year, probably, but they add that much to it. And as you can see, the U.S. Treasury's official figure for the national debt is over $33 trillion. Our national debt is roughly the value of the economies of China, plus Japan, plus Germany, plus India, plus the United Kingdom, all those combined. That's a lot of debt. This is private and government debt. And with unfunded liabilities, if you can see that it's a little bit down on the left side, or unfunded liabilities, those are things like the government is obligated to, Social Security, Medicaid, and other things. It's over $103 trillion. What is clear is that we are up against spiritual forces. More money is spent marketing debt, credit cards, loans, buy now, pay later, that type of thing, more than any other item made. We're up against some of the smartest minds in advertising and brainwashing. These are false prophets of our day, and you know, with our eyes half shut, we think they're just innocent, albeit annoying, advertisers. They're trying to sell us a lie. They and their paid famous influencers are manipulators, driving people to buy, wrecking any semblance of good stewardship. You know, Google tracks everything we do and sells that information so ads can be targeted to each person specifically. I don't put how to get to church in my GPS when I come here on Sabbaths. But do you know what my phone does? About halfway here, it tells me how much further it is to go. And they know this building. They know who owns it. And they know where I am most Sabbaths. We hear about these things, and we're offended. What about my privacy rights? You don't have any. But you know what's even worse and more scary? This is nothing new. It's not a new thing. Google and Facebook are just copying someone else who wants us to get into trouble. Satan tracks every move we make, every activity, every impulse, catalogs and builds a database, and knows how to appeal to us to get us to do this, that, and the other thing. Google isn't the most dangerous entity doing this. They have a partner in the prince of the power of the air. And Ezekiel says in chapter 28, as you well know, what does he say about Satan? By the abundance of your trading, your peddling of lies. They want us to buy, and never be satisfied. A true prophet tells people to turn to God and to obey God's word. Then and only then will we find rest for our souls and do that which truly edifies. Yes, we do have free moral agency. I've made some bad decisions that involve debt and caused myself and my family problems, and maybe you have too. Proverbs 22:7 says, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender." It's not God's will that we be slaves to others. In fact, you know, an obedient Israel would be a creditor nation. Implies that they would be big on saving. Borrowing would be what other nations did. Israel would be the example. That should give us an idea of what really God wants. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verse 6 and 7. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 and 7. "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out of this world." So contentment is great gain. It's improvement. It's progress. You know, many warehouses are a big thing nowadays, and a lot of people, they just have acquired, you know, not that you can't utilize many warehouses for lots of different needs, different timing in your life and all, but there are people who've never seen their stuff, and eventually they die and they can't pay, and somebody buys those 10 mini warehouse storage units and they get everything that's in it. It happens. It's a big investment. I mean, hedge funds are buying them up left, right, and center. They're banking on us never being satisfied. Maybe we can make do with what we already have. Approach problems in a totally different perspective. Test resourcefulness and creativity. You know, what would that debt clock, what would it look like if our nation and its population decided to turn and focus on good stewardship? The numbers would start reversing. Things would start getting better. People's lives would start getting better. Wouldn't that be nice? Psalms 27, verses 21 and 23 say that the wicked borrows and doesn't repay. These cursed will be cut off. Again, that's Psalms 37. Well, that debt that we are looking at will never be repaid. And this country is under a curse for it. And the curse is real, and it's not a trivial thing. The evidence of the curse is all around us. So, Mr. Flynn, I'd be okay if you turn that off now. It's discouraging and distracting, and it's never going to be paid back anyhow. Now, individual cases are going to be different, but perhaps it's prudent to save and move as much out of debt as, you know, as we can. Joseph relied on God. Our little empires also rely on God, but like Joseph, we must make important physical plans and take concrete steps. Joseph managed the business of checking the harvest, designing grain warehouses, managing the workers to maximize the grain savings. While this is an obvious and easy to understand principle, you know, it's not an American norm. Most Americans live paycheck to paycheck with no emergency funds saved. Now, there are lots of reasons for this. It's not simply spending too much. There's illnesses. There's all kinds of things for this. But God gives us an understanding, and he will help us. We must give God something to work with. He can't bless an effort that we never make, right? Approximately 15% of the Bible is about the management of our resources. That's 2,350 verses. That's more than any other single topic, including faith and prayer. Evidently, there are disciplines, patience, character, and wisdom needed that are developed by the way we handle and value God's resources. And Satan knows this. Society today says debt and savings is nothing more than a subjective issue with one approach as good as another. After all, we don't have debtors' prisons anymore. Credit card debt is good because it helps your FICO score. You ever heard that one? Helps your FICO score. Borrow more and your FICO score improves. Close a credit account and your score goes down. Now, what's the aim here? You know, there was a time in the church, and having grown up in the church is an incredible blessing, because I remember these times. There was a time in the church when debt was akin to white bread and white sugar. You know, I say that, and I'm not, we laugh at these things, but it wasn't a joke to them. They really looked at it that way. And I remember one time, I forget what it was that happened at our house, and they had one credit card. It was the Montgomery Ward's credit card, and they almost never used it. And but there were some various issues or whatever. I could hear them talking about it around the kitchen table when I was laying in bed. You know, should we use that card to get whatever it was that needed to be done to fix the washer or whatever? I forget now. Balance is important. There was a time when we didn't look at debt the way we do now. But we've been taught something along the road here. Come with me to Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Verse 5, let your conduct be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. You know, the big things, we got covered. Would we be embarrassed to say something like the following? We'd love to meet you for dinner, but it's not in our budget this month. Can we take a rain check? I remember those kinds of comments as a child, and you know what? They made total sense to me. It wasn't a slight against anyone. Poor, rich, and in between are served by having budgets, by having restraints. You know, driving through life with your eyes closed isn't as safe. It's not a good idea. 2 Corinthians 6:10 is so beautiful to apply here. It reads, as sorrowful, yet also rejoicing. As poor, happy that everybody is doing well. As having nothing and yet possessing all things. It's all in how we look at things. There is no comparing ourselves among ourselves. Too many variables. All have work to do, and our partner in life, God tells us not to. Opportunities and choices have never been greater in this world economy. It's natural to want things, but as a Christian, do they edify? And do the consequences and impacts please God? In Palm Coast, there's a intersection that most of us who've been around there a long time, we try to avoid. And it's because there's this big traffic jam in front of a fast food chain, which I won't mention. I don't want to offend John Flynn's father or anything. But the line to go through the drive-thru is about 40 minutes, 45 minutes long probably, and it comes way out into the normal streetways. And it causes a big problem with traffic. And it makes you wonder, is that rational? Is that good time management? I saw this YouTube video one time. They had found this time capsule. It was buried 25 years earlier, and it had an old cell phone in it and some other things, including a full meal deal, fries and everything. And they were filming it and poking around on it, and it looked pretty much like a brand new one. And the guy even talked about, I think I'm probably going to eat this. No bugs had gotten to it or anything. So I'm thinking, when I'm in that traffic jam one time, you know, if they're really smart with their time, they'd go ahead and buy a year's supply, throw them in the trunk, and get them out whenever they need them. That would be smarter. That's not a dietary recommendation. I'm not in all that stuff. My wife is real good at that stuff, and Mrs. Worthing is, and many of you are. Don't wait for a commercial saying that we already have enough. The false prophets are never going to betray their prince. Never. But we can be frugal. I'm not saying you need to be this frugal, but I had this wonderful aunt, Aunt Relza. She reused paper and envelopes, like she'd get them from the electric company or something, and she'd mail you something that was in one of their envelopes, and she'd write on the back of it if she needed to write on the back. You know, she'd maybe mark out the amount of bill was, but she never bought paper or envelopes or anything like that. Why? She went through the Depression and everything, so she had a little bit different mindset, you know. And you know what? She was really the only one in the family that could come and help other family members when they were in need, because she saved. And we were very thankful for that. And we, you know, we kind of made jokes about the other. But you know what? Maybe one mindset is better. I'm not saying that you need to do that. But, you know, in honor of her, I give my Father's Day cards back to my kids so they can write something new on it in a different spot and mail it back to me. I do that in honor of Aunt Relsa. Saves them a little money, too. You know, serious scarcity is not intended by God. But neither is debt and government social nets all papered over by crushing debt like we were looking at. Mankind chose the hard way when they rejected God. Now, God's system does actually inject scarcity, evidently for our good and for the good of others. And we've all experienced third tithe years, and I know that the management of that is a little bit different now. But many of you have been in third tithe years, and you added up what your bills were, and the math didn't work. You didn't know how God was going to do it, but you trusted God, and you got through that year, and you got to the end, and you said, you know, that was a better year than the other years are. We grow in faith and wisdom when we do face scarcity. Disciplined stewardship in time brings our families peace and tranquility. Not doing so jeopardizes our family's future peace and tranquility. Satan attacks the causes of peace and tranquility. He hates it. He hates anything that is good. He loves the lost sleep, the hopeless feelings of being trapped in debt, mates fighting and children wanting more. You know, addiction for some Americans treats this feeling. For others, it's gone too far. I'd like to read some from, or quote some from the New York Times, not particularly something I normally quote from, but May 2013, addressing things that came from the Great Recession. You know the Great Recession, right? 2008, 2009, in some parts of the country it lasted to 2013 or so. Just depends. Anyway, quoting, the suicide rate for men aged 35 to 64 years jumped 27.3%, while the rate for women increased 31.5%. CDC officials emphasize that the baby boomer generation is witnessing the highest increase in suicides. It's no longer teens, CDC Deputy Director Dr. Eileen Arias told the New York Times. She went on to say the rise in suicides among this group may be connected with the recent downturn in the global economy, the Great Recession, and the challenges the baby boomer generation now confronts. The increase coincides with a decrease in financial standing for a lot of families over the same period. End of quote. Yes, the stock market took a horrible crash. And these people, these boomers, many of them lost 50% or more, and they had needed that money then because they were retiring. So to their credit, they had saved, but the system is dangerous. And stewardship without God is even more dangerous. Very sad. No stones being thrown here. Everyone is up against a powerful and deceiving enemy. Depending on exposure, we've all been brainwashed some. The point is for us to come out of the confusion. Come with me to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10. Verses 4 and 5. Proverbs chapter 10. He who deals with a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes one rich, or makes them to be able to accumulate. He who gathers in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. So diligence is an important key, isn't it? Warren Buffett, a great luminary, said, "An idiot with a plan can beat a genius without one." Now that's encouraging to me. Maybe it is to you. I don't like to quote these, just one great luminary, so I want to quote Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson said, "Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face." Well, sometimes we do get punched in the face. I got punched in the face really bad one time with a townhome project. It was very painful for many years. It wasn't the thing to do. We learn the hard way. A farmer doesn't have immediate gratification. They acquire a field, clear, till, plant, weed, and water, and God causes it to grow, and the farmer only then reaps a harvest. Diligence and time is key. Don't be discouraged because you're kind of moving along slow. You're not making as much progress as you would like. It's slow. Proverbs 6 and verse 6 through 8 says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. So however modest or grand it be, if we aren't now, we can start working for future needs. God is on our side, the most important partner that we can have, and we need to tell him that you understand what you have belongs to him. That is why it's so valuable. And that you need his help to value it as well and to make the right choices. Most people go through life and they never thank God. They never recognize that it all came from God, that he's just lending it to us for a little while. The scriptures tell us that God will provide all our needs, and in times of little and distress, we can expect this help. This is comforting, but I also realize that he provided opportunity for surplus in times past when things were good. Therefore, he has already provided for my lean times, hasn't he? Hasn't he? Does he then have to do it again because I didn't do my part back then? It's a matter of just trying to be fair with God, who's so fair with us. Proverbs 21. In verse 20, Proverbs 21 and verse 20, "There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it. The wise person saves for the future, but the foolish spends whatever they get." Back in the day, I thought budgeting was for another time, another person, and we missed a lot of blessings. Budgets are revealing, full of information, and changes us for the better. Budgets are instrumental in running the Church of God, and we just saw the other day, an update. Buy the truth and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding, Proverbs 23:23. Count the cost. We wouldn't run a business without keeping records. We wouldn't ride in a race car without seat belts and a helmet. Over a few pages, Proverbs 24 and verses 3 through 7. Through wisdom, a house is built, and by understanding, it is established. By knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. A wise man is strong, yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. For by wise counsel, you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors, there is safety. Wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. So through wisdom, the house is built. You know, thought is given to the topic. And by understanding, it is established, it said. You know, we've tried various things and we've made adjustments and tweaks to things. By knowledge, we seek advice. We want to understand better. All the rooms are filled with precious and pleasant riches. A wise man is strong, and a man of knowledge increases in strength. Proverbs 3 and verse 9 reads, honor the Lord with your substance, and with the first fruits of your increase, so shall your barns be filled with plenty, and your presses shall burst with new wine. You know, supporters of blue laws can point out their benefits. All they need to do is quote MIT studies. However, the bigger reality is that these laws unknowingly veered into an important area of character development, one of discipline, order, peace, faith, and freedom, the area of stewardship, the management of what God has loaned each of us. The national debt clock speaks for itself. So much of the world, people and governments, are up over their eyeballs in debt. The unrest is growing by the day. Credit card companies are pulling credit, and many businesses today, their lines of credit, the things that they use for day-to-day operations that they go in and out of, have been canceled or halted because they may not be paid back. Odds are they won't be. Food bank use is up 50 to 80%, around 80% in Canada, between 50 and 80 in the United States, and the food banks cannot keep up. There's one such food bank in Northeast Florida that I have to sometimes drive past, and sometimes it's so saddening because the line is 2 or 3 miles long of cars. Many cases, you know, cars have been in one spot for a long time. People are out talking. I mean, it's peaceful and everything. And there, a lot of them are very new cars and all. I mean, there's a problem out there. Now, could some new financial scheme provide relief? I don't know. There's no law or program they're not willing to break. And then on the horizon, something bigger and more damaging probably than outsourcing was. And when I talk about it, you know what I mean, where companies went overseas and built factories and all, and it damaged the middle class very badly. Well, something else is coming, and it's just around the corner. Yes, they're bringing factories back, reshoring, I think they call it. But those factories that they're building, it's nice to hear that they're building a lot of factories again in the United States. They don't have very big parking lots. Do you know why? Because they're not going to have very many people in them. It's all going to AI and automation and robotics. No personal contracts to negotiate anymore, no health insurance, leave time, holidays, injuries, unions, or attitudes to deal with. The momentum is toward a smaller and poorer middle class. Our government social net is unfunded. You know, however, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind and the New King James and the King James are about the only Bibles that translate it sound mind. The others translate it a little more accurately, I think. Self-discipline, self-control. That's the mind that God has given us. So God's counsel is to prepare. God can do anything, and he is faithful. So let's be faithful to him and be good stewards now.